Okay, I think we're in for some interesting conversation about bark beetles with Connie Mimmel today. Connie gave us a preview at our teaching staff meeting, showing us actual examples that she has brought of bark beetles and such. And I'm very excited about this presentation. The only thing that I need to tell you besides have fun and enjoy is that this session is being recorded. And so as you participate in conversation with Connie and with one another, your voice will likely be picked up and be part of the recording. So just be aware of that, because that is going on. And without any further delay, let's get on with the show.
Well, thank you very much, and it's interesting to be following talk about the Reformation, so maybe we're going from the sublime to the ridiculous, but then again, maybe not. So there was a well-known insect taxonomist who was asked years ago if he, from his long work in evaluating insects, what he had learned about the Creator. And he said, an inordinate fondness for beetles. So what I'm gonna talk about today is bark beetles and how they respond to fire, because of course here at Holden, this is something that we are likely to see in the coming months. And in fact, that we're kind of seeing now. So I've called it "What's Next After the Fire," because there are lots of interactions between insects and fire. So get going here. Yes, I think we will. Let's go next. All right. Maybe not. I'm going to try this. There. All right. Next slide. So we're going to talk about bark beetles today. I'm going to talk about wood borers on Wednesday. And then that will cover kind of the two big categories. Bark beetles, some entomologists are more interested in wood borers, some bark beetles. I kind of think bark beetles rule, because they are the killers. And they, in fact, many of our tree-killing bark beetles are in the genus Dendroctonus. And Dendroctonus means tree killer. I have some of them in this little box here. And actually, when you look at that box, you'll see, when you look at the spruce beetles, that there's been yet another insect in my collection that is now eating on the beetles that I've collected, which brings up a little poem that we all learn in Entomology 101, which goes, "Fleas have lesser fleas upon their backs to bite them, and lesser fleas have lesser fleas, and so ad infinitum." So those are the two jokes that I have. That's it. I'm done for the day. So bark beetles are pretty small, and many people will look at them and say, how could a little thing like that kill a tree? And the answer is that one beetle cannot kill a tree. But in here I have 8,000 beetles. And these were all captured in one trap over the course of 1 week.
Wow.
So that's how it happens. It's just like bacteria.
Was that here?
No, that was not here. That was not here. And one of the questions that I'm asking myself, and the reason that I've gotten your help here at Holden in collecting beetles from these traps, is we look around and bark beetles need to have a live tree. They most of them, as I said here, are obligate tree killers. And what they do is they eat the phloem of a live tree or a recently dead tree. And the phloem is that thin layer underneath the bark where nutrients are translocated from the crown down to the roots. And so it's full of photosynthate and sugars, and that's very nutritious. And that's what they eat. So the tree can be dead, but it can't have been long dead because lots of things break down the phloem. It will get moldy over time, it will dry out and decompose. And so they need it fresh. And that's why, and most of them are specific to their host species, because trees have a lot of defenses against bark beetles. And I think I have some good photographs of that here. Yeah, so Dendroctonus means tree killer. I'll talk about the Dendroctonus beetles and some others. They introduced to the tree a blue staining fungus, and somebody was asking me today. She said she had seen on the 10-mile trail a lot of pines in particular that had been cut, and the sapwood was stained blue. And that is brought in by bark beetles. They actually have structures on their bodies that are called mycangia. And they have really been seen stuffing those mycangia with the spores of fungi. They probably eat the fungi as well as the phloem of the tree, but the fungi also get into the tree and they grow in the sapwood. And the sapwood is where moisture is translocated from the roots up to the crown. So there's two factors at play there that kill the tree. The phloem is being cut off, and the moisture from the sapwood is being cut off. Yes?
So the phloem is between the sapwood and the hardwood, or between the sapwood
right under
and the
bark.
Bark?
It's right under the bark. Okay. So under the bark, right under the bark is a thin layer of cells called the cambium. There's the phloem, there's the bark, the phloem, the cambium, and then the sapwood. The cambium is a new cell-producing layer, and it produces phloem on the outside and sapwood on the inside. And then the heartwood is kind of the old sapwood that has died.
Yeah.
And that's really another story. There are things that break down the heartwood too. But a tree can live without heartwood. As you know, if you've ever cut firewood or watched a tree fall, it's structural. And as a tree gets bigger and bigger, it'll have a lot of dead, really dead material on the center, and then live wood on the outside. And if that center rots, what happens is the tree becomes structurally unsound. And yeah, that really is a story for a different time, when you're looking at trees and saying, well, the tree is still alive, but is it structurally sound enough that I want it near my building? So, did I answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Bark beetles are attracted to weakened trees usually, and they're specific generally to a single type of host, because the beetle has to be able to tolerate the defenses of the host when it attacks a live tree, because live trees do have a lot of defenses against bark beetles. So they have, So this is, these are some of the defenses that a live tree has. Live trees have pitches that can physically exclude bark beetles, and pines are particularly good at this. Pine has pitch that crystallizes when it hits the air. And so you see on the right there, there's a picture of a mountain pine beetle that has been killed by a tree. So trees can do that. And that's a loss. And so as far as evolving along with its host, beetles learn, if you will, to detect trees that are weakened, because if very much of that stuff on the right goes on, a lot of beetles can be lost to the population with no regeneration. So on the left here, this lower left, if you can see, that's the butt of a bark beetle sticking out of a pitch pocket. And I watched that beetle for a long time swimming around in that pitch. And it would swim in, and then the tree would push it out, and it would swim in, and the tree would push it out. And it was, I must have watched it for 10 minutes before it finally got in and didn't get pitched back out again. So I think the beetle won that one. Mm-hmm.
But on the right, of course, the tree one that time.
So is it the same white stuff in both the pitch?
Yes. Yeah. What happens is the tree produces this pitch, and as beetles get into the tree, that pitch is extruded physically. That's a physical response of the tree. The same thing would happen if you stuck a nail into the tree. The tree would start making pitch around it. It's a healing process that the tree does. Now this is a Douglas fir. Douglas fir produces resin. Douglas fir doesn't have a pitch that crystallizes the way that that pines do, but it produces resin that flows and sometimes will flow abundantly. And in the lab, if you put Douglas fir beetles in this Douglas fir resin, it has compounds in it that will kill the beetles. So it's really toxic to beetles. And if you can see in that picture, resin is flowing down this tree and it's actually dripping off the branch on the right. And so what happened here is I was in an area on the National Forest, and we wanted to produce some snags for wildlife habitat because there was a shortage of snags in this area. So I put attractants, the same attractant that's in those traps out there, I put attractants on this tree so that beetles would come in and attack the tree and make a sound snag for wildlife habitat. And thousands of beetles attacked this tree, and the tree responded with this tremendous outpouring of resin, just flowed down the tree. And the tree looked really sick at the end of the year, had lots of yellow needles, but it survived and it's still alive. So if you want beetles to come and kill a tree, you might fail, because this was the wrong tree for the beetles to attack, and evidently the population just was not high enough in the area. Maybe that's why we were short of snags in that area.
What is a snag?
A snag is a dead tree.
Okay.
Thank you for asking.
Yeah. And why do you want that?
Snags are really valuable for wildlife habitat, and if we have time after this is over, we can take a little walk and I'll show you some of that.
We have plenty around here.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, there's lots of snags now. Not a problem that you're having around Holden these days. So there's always that balance going on between how many beetles are in the area attacking and how vigorous the tree is. And that relationship changes over time. It can change in the course of a year, and it changes from year to year. But even a very weak tree will usually have enough chemical defenses to fight off a few beetles that are attacking. But if this many beetles are attacking over and over again, even a vigorous tree will be overcome. So really, I've already talked about how bark beetles kill trees. They kill trees in two ways. They literally eat the phloem by which the crown translocates nutrients down to the roots. And they introduce a blue-staining fungus. Pine bark beetles are particularly good at this blue-staining relationship. And it's a symbiotic relationship that they have. And that then prevents the roots from sending moisture up to the crown. And the process is pretty fast. Once a tree is mass attacked, usually that tree physiologically will be dead within a few days or a week. There's not much that can be done to save a tree once it has been mass attacked and beetles have really started feeding in that phloem. The adults generally will feed in one direction, and then being insects with complete metamorphosis, they have an adult stage, an egg stage, and a larval stage, which is this little this grub here that you can see. And both the adults and the grub-like larvae eat the phloem.
These beetles can fly, right?
Yes, yes.
So they can migrate from tree to tree.
Yes. And I'll go over a little bit the life cycle of each of the big players after fire. Not every species of bark beetle is a big player after fire, but we have a few that are. So this is what the blue staining fungus looks like. And it really reduces the water uptake. It hasn't completely blocked the phloem, but it is, the xylem. But that's the kind of thing that it does. It also reduces the value of logs that are salvaged after fire. And as a consumer, this has always surprised me, because I know I have paid a premium price for logs with this blue stain, but it really is kind of a specialty market. And often mills won't even accept these blue stained logs because it does reduce the value.
Does it damage the integrity of the wood?
It does not damage the integrity of the wood, but what it does is the wood then will not accept a stain very well. And many of the stains and finishes that you want to put on wood will turn kind of an ugly black if the wood is blue stained. And this blue stain, it's a fungus. So if you have logs that are stained like this and they're in your log yard, this fungus can then spread to your other logs, and so it will stain them too. So many mills won't even take it.
Is this fungus going to be along the whole log itself?
Eventually. Yeah, it does. It gets started as the beetles introduce it, and then it will spread gradually throughout the log. So the sooner you process the log, the less blue stain you'll have.
So that stain is in the heartwood?
No, the stain is only in the sapwood, and you can see the outline of the heartwood there in the center.
What dimension is that across?
It's been a long time since I took that picture. It's not a very large log. It's probably 18, 20 inches.
That's a long way in for the sapwood, isn't it, unusually?
It was a fast-growing tree. Wow. This was actually a rather young tree in a plantation. So
the beetles got in
when? The beetles were right here. You could almost see some of the pitchiness around there.
Because it looks more intense around the center.
Well, the fungus then has its own life cycle. And it will start growing in the cells of the xylem, and then it just spreads on its own. It doesn't need the beetles to keep it going. They just introduce it. So bark beetles can produce fuel, of course. They can kill trees. And on the way up to Holden, on the other side of Railroad Creek, there were, before the fire, quite a lot of dead lodgepole pines that had been killed by mountain pine beetles. And that was a lot of fuel, and you could see the intensity of the fire on the other side of Railroad Creek at that place where we stopped, Nancy, and talked. So they can increase the fuel load, but then as trees are damaged by fire and weakened, then they can also, bark beetle outbreaks can be initiated by that. So these are the big ones that we know respond to fire. We have Douglas fir beetles in Douglas fir. We have western pine beetles in ponderosa pine. So three of these are really pine beetles. Red turpentine beetles, also in pines. And then pine engravers. This is not a dendroctonous beetle, they're an Ips beetle in pine. So those are the four that I'm going to talk about their life cycles.
Are they all here?
Yes, they're all here.
What do you mean respond to fire?
These are the ones that are likely to have an uptick following fire. So mountain pine beetles, for instance, are not on this list. Mountain pine beetles are more likely to be seen in very slow growing lodgepole pine. I'm not saying you'd never see mountain pine beetles after fall, you might. But these are particularly attracted to fire damaged trees.
Are these invasive species?
None of them, they're all native.
Are they global?
They are all, let's see, they are all not global, but they are across the U.S. into Canada and down to Mexico. So they're native beetles. And the things that they do, both before and after fires, are well adapted to our forests. And we've seen some changes in this beetle behavior based on different kinds of forest management. I'll talk about that a little bit. And then there's climate change that also is playing into some beetle activity in ways that we don't know exactly what's going to happen there. The simple story is insects tend to get more active in warmer weather, but there's more to it than that. So Douglas fir beetle, this is Dendroctena pseudosugi. They are specific to Douglas firs. You can recognize Douglas fir beetle attacks when you see this bright orange dust. And this particular log was a blowdown. Douglas fir beetles are really attracted to blowdown. But they are also attracted to Douglas firs that have been damaged by drought, flooding, fire, anything that causes Douglas firs to become weakened can bring in Douglas fir beetles. So their only host is Douglas fir. They prefer large trees. And really, the larger the better. They have one generation a year. And this is a beetle that we're watching here at Holden, because there are so many Douglas firs that survived the fire, particularly right around the village. But for somebody like myself, What I know is that the population was really at an endemic level before the fire, which is to say, these beetles were picking off a tree here and there as trees got damaged or blew down because of root disease. So they were here, and they would get reported by our aerial survey every year, but not in any large numbers. We had a big fire that really killed a lot of trees and toasted them. So these beetles cannot live in cooked phloem. The phloem has to be fresh. So those trees that are completely blackened with phloem that is now sour and dry are not going to be host for Douglas fir beetles. The trees have to be damaged, but still have good phloem. So I don't know. We have to have a population to respond to this disturbance. So whether we're going to see now a lot of Douglas fir beetles coming in, or whether there's a population around that's big enough to respond to all of this resource before the trees either heal or die and then deteriorate so they're no longer suitable, this is a question. It's very interesting to somebody like me. So it's a monitoring opportunity.
When you say one generation per year, does that mean the life cycle is that long?
Yes, one generation per year. So let's see what I have going on. Yes, I will talk about that. So in the spring, usually fairly early, Douglas fir beetle adults will emerge from their natal tree. And so that tree will be eaten up. So they have to find something new. They're usually active, most active in May, the month of May. But they can, you know, some of them will keep coming out right through the spring and summer. But that usually that May generation, that May flight is the big one. And they'll go looking for a damaged tree. And when the first we call them pioneer beetles. They'll find a damaged tree or a tree that looks suitable, and if they get in there and they're successful in forming what we call a gallery, which is the pattern that they use for feeding, then they start producing this pheromone, which attracts other beetles, and that's when the mass attack is initiated. So that mass attack will be initiated, and then the male and female will mate. The female lays eggs on either side of her feeding gallery. I have a few pictures of that. And the eggs hatch in about a week, and those little grub-like larvae then start eating out from the adult gallery. So the adults will feed vertically, and the little larvae will feed horizontally. And it makes a sort of fan-like pattern underneath the barn. We call it the signature of the beetle. Each beetle has a slightly different pattern that they make under the bark. So those larvae will... Yes?
If you peel off the bark, then can you see this?
Yes, you can. And so the larvae will feed until they are mature. They molt, as larvae will do, 4 or 5 times. And when they are mature, they pupate and go through that magical transformation where that grub-like larva turns into an adult beetle. And they'll spend the winter underneath the bark, usually as adults. And then they become quiescent in the winter. In the spring, they'll feed for a little while and then burrow out, and it starts over again. So that's a one-year life cycle for these beetles. Most of them do overwinter as adults, which is why they emerge fairly early in the spring. But there are some that overwinter as large larvae. And if they do that, then they've got to feed a little longer. And those are the ones that start emerging late May and June. We can track them as late as August, but usually that flight in August is pretty small. And personally, I don't think I've ever seen any lethal attacks that happened that late in the season. But definitely May, all the way through June, and probably into July, we can see lethal attacks by this beetle. So this is a picture I took at Holden. This was prior to the minor mediation, when we were a little freer to move around. And this, in the early 2000s, we had several years of rather extreme drought, which you may remember. And we got some patches of, so those patches of dead trees, I see the light is not that great, but there's a patch here and a patch here and kind of extends over to there. That was following the drought. It's been several years, so that was probably 2003 I took that picture. So it's been a long time since there was that much that was for beetle activity at Holden.
Do the beetles tend to attack the trunk or up in the crown or anywhere?
They like the large. They tend to attack first at about the 4 or 5 foot where the tree is pretty large diameter, and then they'll go up and down from there, is usually what they do. This is the pattern that they make under the bark. So my granddaughter, when she was rather little, she picked this up. She said, "Oh, Grandma, isn't this beautiful?" Yes, it is. So
we're looking at the bark there,
this
correct?
Is the underneath of the bark. So this is a pattern that they leave. This is the signature of a Douglas fir beetle. So the adult gallery is right there. And then this is what the larvae do. So they go out, and when they're done developing, they make what we call these little pupation chambers here and here, and that's where they pupate. They make that quiescent stage, and then they become adults. Now, when Douglas fir beetles fully colonize a tree, it is to their advantage not to get overpopulated. Because if that happens, then the tree resource gets used up too fast, and maybe none of these larvae will be able to make it to maturity. and that's bad for the beetles. And in fact, if larvae start encountering each other, if one moves into the feeding area of the other, they'll eat each other. So they'll cannibalize each other. So there is a way that beetles will communicate with each other that the tree is full, and that is with a pheromone. We call it anti-aggregation pheromone, and the scientific name is 3-methylcyclohex-1N1, and the abbreviation is MCH. So that is an anti-aggregation pheromone that informs incoming beetles that this tree is full and they need to go somewhere else, which is part of the reason that you see trees attacked in groups. So beetles may come in, and that one tree is full, but there are other Douglas firs around. And so other Douglas firs will get attacked in the vicinity of that initial tree that was attacked. So there are people who are chemical entomologists, and they spend their time in the laboratory analyzing these kinds of things. And my heart goes out to them. They do wonderful work, and they do work that people like me can use. So this pheromone was identified back in the early 90s and actually has been produced in the laboratory. And we have this as a tool to use. We can use this operationally. So this is what we call a bubble cap. So that bubble there on this piece of plastic has a little bit of liquid MCH in there. And it has, the newer ones now have a full gram of MCH in there. You can take these plastic caps and staple them to trees, and it will literally keep Douglas fir beetles from attacking. And it works great. If you get it out in time, you can keep Douglas fir beetles from attacking. And so So outside the village, Aaron Peterson and I, with the Forest Service, went out and put these bubble caps out. And so, at least for now, for this year, this should prevent Douglas fir beetles from attacking the Douglas firs right around the village. I'm not saying anything about whether those trees will live through their injuries, because many of them are injured. And I'll be talking Thursday about tree injuries from fire and how you can determine whether or not they'll survive. But one of the things that happens when they're injured is they then become weakened. And just like when you and I are injured, we're more susceptible to infection. Trees are more susceptible to bark beetle attack. Trees have priorities for where they put their photosynthate. And the first priority really is just respiration, just maintaining those live tissues, the needles and the buds and all of those live tissues. And the second priority is growth, and then seeds and cones. And these chemical defenses are not the high priority. So if a tree is weak and it's putting all its energy into just respiration and it's lost maybe part of its crown, so it's not photosynthesizing as well, maybe some of the cambium is damaged, it's not going to have a lot left over for chemical defenses against bark beetles. And there are terpenes that the tree puts out that inform bark beetles that that's going on. So that's why we worry, or why we need to be aware of what might happen after fire.
And where can you get these bubble caps then?
They are available from two companies that I know of. Both of them are in Canada, but they have business offices in the U.S. And they most of them are in the agriculture business. So lots of pheromones are used in agriculture, of course, but there are some forestry uses too. And so one of them is called Synergy, and the other one is called, I'm not sure if they're still in business anymore, but Green Global. They just changed the name. I took this picture today. Travis and I were out looking at the bark beetle traps. So there was, or there is, one of the traps that's rather close to a tree that was damaged but not quite dead. And I peeled the bark away, and so you can see the little larvae in there. And they actually appear to be in their pupation chambers now. So they're pretty large as beetles go. I thought I had brought them with me, but I guess I left them back in my room. So that's where they are now. That's what they're doing. Any questions about Douglas fir beetles? I'm going to move on to western pine beetles. So this is Dendroctonus brevicolmus. Western pine beetles really are best known for attacking individual, very large, old, stressed ponderosa pines. They are specific to ponderosa pines. That's the only species that they attack in Washington. In California, they also attack coulter pines. But this is a tree on the Yakima Reservation, and at one time it was the largest live ponderosa pine in the state of Washington that we knew of, but there's a road that goes right by it, and it was kind of a tourist attraction, and people walked around it a lot, and it had lots of old damage from fires and various things, and one day I went by and western pine beetles have found it. So that's very typical of what western pine beetles do. This is a tree I found kind of out in the woods. I walked by and there had been a lightning storm the day before. Maybe you can see up near the top, there's a streak where the lightning hit the tree and went straight down. When lightning hits a tree, it sends out lots of terpenes, and the tree really goes into great stress response. And if that happens at the time that beetles are flying, then they'll find it right away. And this tree was attacked within 24 hours. And so that one died. Western pine beetles have two generations a year. So they go through that whole cycle twice. They overwinter usually as either adults or large larvae. So they'll be emerging pretty early, similar to the way Douglas fir beetles emerge, and then they'll have two generations. So they have the potential to do more damage in a single year. The other thing they do, they don't just attack big old pines. They're also pretty good at doing group killing in the small, densely stocked ponderosa pines. They'll respond to blowdown, and they like blowdown trees, and they also like fire-damaged trees.
So is there purpose to kill some trees so others can grow? I mean, in the huge scheme of things, do they have a
I wouldn't a say call that to they creation? Have a call. But I can talk about what happens during an outbreak, because sometimes that will happen. And when an outbreak happens, what will go on is you'll get a whole lot of trees being susceptible at the same time. And that could happen because there's blowdown, that could happen because of drought, flooding, you know, anything that stresses a lot of trees all at one time. You could get a situation like this, where trees are just very overstocked, and that kind of simulates drought. The trees are all competing for the same resource, nobody's really getting enough moisture, they're competing for sunlight. And these are easy for beetles to colonize. These trees don't have a lot of defensive chemicals. The beetle population can get bigger and bigger because every female can produce 20 or 30 new beetles. And if they have a lot of success, then you can get a lot of trees killed. This is very common in lodgepole pine with mountain pine beetles. That's kind of the best known host-pest interaction in forestry, is lodgepole pine getting overstocked and killed by mountain pine beetles, but I'm not going to talk about them today. But when that happens, you'll get that big population uptick, and then they will exhaust the resource, and then the population will drop dramatically. It won't drop to zero, the native beetles, they'll always be around. But one of my entomology professors, the way he described it is the beetles will get stupid during an outbreak. They'll start attacking trees that are too vigorous to be overcome. Sometimes they'll get into non-host, and the population will drop, and then sometimes there'll be a few years when trees that you would expect to get attacked won't get attacked, or won't get lethally attacked, because the population has just collapsed. But they're not down to zero. The whole thing will build up again, and eventually the cycle will start. Some beetles are just known for outbreaks, and the mountain pine beetle is the poster child for that. Others, like Douglas fir beetle, this one, western pine beetle, don't outbreak as often, but we do see outbreaks when there's just a lot of host. And with Douglas fir beetle outbreaks, usually they last about 4 years. You get the big fire damage, you get the big blowdown, the flood, you get a big increase in the population, and then they start attacking live trees, undamaged trees, and that will happen usually 2 years after the disturbance, but then they have losses because these trees have resins, these trees have defensive chemicals. Maybe they get overcome, but the beetles have losses too. And so generally every year, assuming you don't get another disturbance, you get fewer and fewer trees killed, and generally by the fourth year it falls off. Did that answer your question?
How long does it take the beetles to kill a tree?
It's fast. Uh-huh. Once a tree is mass attacked, uh-huh. physiologically, yeah. it dies pretty fast.
Okay.
Between the girdling of the tree with the phloem being eaten and the introduction of a blue stain fungus.
So it needs a certain population of the beetles to do that?
Yes. And sometimes you'll get what we call a strip kill. So it may be just one side of the tree will be killed. And then over time the tree may grow over that, so that years later you'll see a place in the bark that's sort of irregular and maybe flattened, and you don't know what went on there. Well, really there's a dead spot there, and it's just bark that's growing over it. This is the signature of western pine beetle, and I worked with one forester who used to, he said he remembered that by thinking spaghetti western, because it looks like somebody threw spaghetti on the bark of the tree, and it's a western pine beetle, right? And this is a little bit unique, too, in that the adult makes all those galleries, and the larva does not feed in the phloem for very long. So this is the larval gallery, just that little blip there. And then it turns and it goes into the bark and it finishes by eating the bark. So it really has different nutritional requirements from some of those other larvae that we work with. So there's a real typical thing that you'll see when western pine beetles have attacked a tree. So you'll see on the left there that ponderosa pine, how the bark has been flaked off. Woodpeckers do that. Woodpeckers really like western pine beetles. They're small beetles, but they're so easy to get because the larvae are just in the bark. They don't even have to go through the bark. They can just flake off the bark. In fact, I flaked off the bark. And on the upper right hand there, you can see those little larvae with their little yellow heads sticking out. So that's what they do. And it's kind of interesting. So if you see that kind of pattern, and these trees on the left there, they're green. They are green. But you can walk through the woods, and if you see that kind of bark flaking pattern, and usually there'll be pieces of bark just all over the ground underneath that tree. And so the woodpeckers have figured it out before you did.
Which woodpeckers do that?
Whatever's out there, yeah.
But by then the pine tree is...
It's dead. Yeah. So down at the base of the tree, those are the fallers getting ready to take that tree down, because that's at the Lake Wenatchee compound, and there are houses all around there. And that was following fire that little uptick in Western pine beetle occurred. And that's actually been going on for about 4 years now, that increase in population. But that Western pine beetle population was high before the fire. And so it really just got a little boost. It wasn't a large fire. It was less than 40 acres. And it wasn't an intense fire, but it just did a lot of damage. So there was still good phloem for the beetles to get in.
So they're cutting that tree down? Because
yes.
It's at risk of falling down?
Well, yeah.
How quickly are they damaged so much that they would fall?
Well, really the protocol is if you have buildings there that are occupied, you don't leave a dead tree stand. Yeah. If this were a road, we'd leave it in the woods, but not if there are homes around. So red turpentine beetle is Dendroctonus valens. This is our largest Dendroctonus beetle, which is to say it might get as big as the nail on my little finger. And this is an interesting one because although it is a Dendroctonus beetle, for us it's not a tree killer. It's a nuisance beetle, and it's very common after fires. It has really evolved with our pines, and it'll get into many species of pines. Most often I see it in ponderosa pine, but the adult doesn't make a very long gallery, and the female lays her eggs in a bunch, and the larvae feed gregariously. So they'll feed in a clump, and the tree will just pitch and pitch and pitch, and the larvae can really tolerate that. Sometimes they'll get pitched out, but usually they'll tolerate it. They'll eat the phloem in a limited area, and they just are not tree killers. Although they weaken trees, they don't do the tree any good. This tree was attacked. This is a very heavy attack, and this dark red. Again, I'm sorry for the quality of the picture, but this dark red you can see on the tree, that's just the tree pitching. And the reason it's dark red is you've got both beetle excrement and the debris from their chewing in the bark. This happened after logging. This was a leave tree, and there were lots of leave trees. This was a thinning. But the logging happened in the spring, and the ground was very wet. So the equipment really compacted the ground, and it did a lot of root damage. And this is the most amazing red turpentine beetle attack I have ever seen. But I think out of hundreds of trees that were attacked, I think one was killed, and I'm not sure that.
Did they invite other beetles to come in and kill the tree? Or?
More usually, so the question was, do they cause other beetles to come in? I've never seen that. Although very often they'll come in after other beetles have attacked. Mm-hmm. You often see them with following Western pine beetle attacks. Mm-hmm. And you'll often see them in stumps, fresh stumps, they'll come in. But the beetle does have potential. China imported red turpentine beetles in raw logs from the Pacific Northwest. And they are a major tree killer in China. Oh. And it's heartbreaking to see what had happened to Chinese pines as a result of the red turpentine beetles that they brought in. So we're not why do they do that? Import pests, we export them too. Chinese pines are not adapted to this. And what they tend to do in China is they'll get down right at the base. They're typically, they will attack the lower 4 feet of a tree. But China, they tend to go down into the roots. They'll do that here too, but that's much more typical in China. They'll go down into the roots and they'll just eat the roots. So if you want to read any research on red turpentine beetles, most of it's coming out of China. And we do a lot of cooperation with them because, you know, this is bad news. This is one of those bad stories that makes import-export, gives them a bad name.
Why did they bring them over? The
logs hadn't been treated. They were untreated logs. And, I'm sure it was ignorance. Importing and exporting raw logs is just a bad idea. You really want to have them fumigated.
You can do that. Can you fumigate the log and then
kills
the beetles and...
Well, and I'm not the expert on that. That's a question. That's always a question. Are you getting in there deep enough to get... You can get the red turpentine beetles, but what about the wood borers? So, it's an issue. This is the Carlton Complex fire. This was part of the Chelan fires. So this is this year's red turpentine beetle attacks in the Mehow Valley. Lots and lots of that going on. They do attack all species of pines, and these also have one generation a year. This is on the left, a clump of larvae, and that's literally where they're feeding. They're just feeding gregariously there. And on the right, I have a photograph of adults in a pitch mass, and they have more ability to tolerate that than many of our other pine beetles. They'll also get in near wounds. If a tree is chopped into or something falls against it and it's a pine, often you'll see these big pitch masses around it with that red frass in them, and that's apt to be red turpentine beetles. So pine engraver is an interesting one. These are ubiquitous in slash. So if you thin pines or tops blow out of pines, they'll get in there. Has to be more than about 3 inches in diameter, but they can get into pretty small stuff. And they don't really get into large trees. The largest I've ever seen them get into is about 8 inches in diameter. They're really kind of a decomposer. They're valuable for that, but they can get aggressive depending on what's going on. They're real widely distributed. And they can kill small trees. Often when this will happen is, when western pine beetles attack a big pine, it's very common to see Ips beetles in the top. So they'll get into the top, and the Spokane Reservation had an outbreak of western pine beetles following blowdown, and they had 4 years of just lots of really nice pines getting killed. And then the year after that outbreak collapsed, they had one more year when a bunch of tops got killed by Ips beetles because the Ips beetles had built up so much during that outbreak. I've also seen them kill small trees after construction. You know, if there's construction and a lot of pines are on the ground and the mess doesn't get cleaned up, so this is my call for good sanitation, clean up that green slash. They can build up in that slash, and then if they build up enough, then they might kill small trees around. They're not aggressive in the sense that we don't get these outbreaks that last for years. Usually the outbreak, if they do damage, it'll happen in a single year. But that might mean some trees that you didn't want to lose. And they have multiple generations a year, at least three. Up here, they're probably limited to three. And it's the generation that flies in July that's usually the one that gets into live trees and kills them. So I have a picture of a beetle in the lower right-hand corner there. These are eggs. So she's laid an egg here, and she's laid an egg there. And so she's busy laying eggs. If you can see her little butt, it looks like somebody took a bite out of it, which is how you can tell an Ips beetle from a Dendroctonus beetle. The Dendroctonus beetles, their butts are smooth. So just a couple of examples of what they can do. So post-thinning, maybe this was after construction. Anyway, there was a slash pile of a lot of pines, and the pile was pretty big. And around the pile were these young pines. And so the pile filled up with Ips beetles, and that slash didn't get cleaned up. And so later in the year, that generation came out of the pile, and the pile by then is all dry. They'd really rather get a slash, but there wasn't any slash around that was suitable. And so they killed these little trees that were, overstocked and weakened. And then on the right there, again, this was post-Western pine beetle outbreak. You can see the top of that pine that got killed by Ips beetles. So it's a perfectly nice pine, but the top now has died.
Excuse me, if the top dies, what happens to the rest of the tree? Is it able to survive that?
Good question. Trees can really survive that. Yeah, and that tree in particular, that's a pretty good sized tree. And in fact, even from this tree is part of the timber management area, but you're not going to get a log any higher than that. So the only thing you'd really worry about is if the tree still has enough crown to continue growing. Often trees will put up another leader, so it may try to regain its apical dominance with the branch there, or sometimes it'll start, multiple branches will start to compete for that apical dominance. But no, the tree can certainly survive that. The only danger then is that fungus may be introduced and start to cause rot in the lot. That is, so that's my talk about bark beetles. So those are our big players after fire. I've run over my time, I see, a little bit. But be happy to take any questions. And I do have some handouts, too, if any of you are interested. We have these forest insect and disease leaflets on various bark beetles, and so if you want them, I have them.
Are there spruce beetles too?
Spruce beetles, yes. And I did not include them because we rarely see them responding to fire, and the reason is that spruce are usually killed by fire. If a tree is damaged enough to be weakened by fire, they're usually killed by fire. But spruce beetles really respond to a blowdown. Yeah, if you get a blowdown in spruce, and that's another outbreak that can last till probably 80% of the trees are killed. Up in the Passaic Wilderness, some places it's hard to find a live mature spruce right now. So, yes?
Did you say these were nationwide beetles?
Yeah. Yes. Well, the range of the host is the range of the beetle.
Okay. So are there any other pine beetles in other parts? I mean, is this the main pine for beetles?
There are other pine beetles in the southeast. There's a southern pine beetle, which is a very aggressive beetle that causes great problems in the south. There's a Jeffrey pine beetle, which may or may not be the same beetle as the red turpentine beetle. There's plenty of beetles out there. There's no way I could cover or even recite the extent of them all. Yes?
I've heard a few lecturers on this topic say that the incidence of bark beetle infestations is increasing. Is that true, and is that related to increases in disturbances, and is that related to your statement on climate change?
It depends on the beetle. We've had huge outbreaks of mountain pine beetle, which actually, so that was in the 2000s, and those outbreaks in the West have decreased now because the host has been so decimated. And that was really a factor of the amount of host available. So mountain pine beetle and lodgepole pine, they're really closely related. Lodgepole pine and fire, very closely related. It's an early successional species that comes back after fire. And the way it comes back is the cones are serratus, right? So they will stay on the tree for years, and then in the heat of a fire, they'll gradually open that pitch that keeps them shut, will gradually open, and if everything works the way it should, the seeds will fall down onto that thin, recently cooled and well-prepared seed bed, and you'll get thousands and thousands of lodgepoles coming back. And so we had that happen over the West in the 1910s, and we had so many acres of, you know, well-prepared lodgepole pine, and it gets to be about 100 years old, or 80 to 100 years old, and about that big around and really dense, and mountain pine beetles find it. And that's called the entomological rotation age of lodgepole pine. And so we had that. We had that, and some of us were around to see it. But then what has happened in Canada, which you may have read about, is mountain pine beetle crossed the Rockies, which it hadn't done before. Not because there's not host there, but because at that elevation, it takes mountain pine beetles kind of a long time to complete their life cycle. And if they can't complete their life cycle in a year, there's a lot that can go wrong. So at high elevation, they don't do well. But as the growing season gets longer, it doesn't take that long, an extra 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, they might complete their life cycle. So they cross the Rockies and they've gotten into the jack pine, which is what we call a naive host. There's no reason why mountain pine beetle couldn't attack them, but mountain pine beetle just hadn't found them yet. So now it's found them. And a lot of interesting studies, and I'm not familiar with all the work, but a lot of interesting studies going on how jack pine is behaving under this attack from a new pest. So. Yes?
In addition to the homegrown varieties, do we have any invasive problems?
We have some bark beetles that are moving around, and we don't know really how long they've been here. For instance, a California five-spined Ips, which is another Ips that I didn't talk about, has been common in California and southern Oregon. And for some years now, it's been active in the Columbia Gorge, where we don't know how long it's been there, and we don't know how it got there. It may be a natural migration. I suspect it's firewood, personally. And now we're starting to find it in Washington. So it appears to be moving, and you know, it appears to be moving along travel routes, human travel routes, so it probably is firewood. And it's more aggressive than the Ips pinei that I talked about, and has been killing large trees in the Columbia Gorge. So that's been happening. And we have a number of wood borers, which are not native, that we've imported. You know, by and large, we haven't imported a lot of raw logs, but we import a lot of wood products, and some of that has wood borers in it that can live in dry wood. And so we have the Asian longhorn beetle, and we have the emerald ash borer. We don't have them here, but they're close. So, yeah. It's something we need to be aware of. Insects move in a lot of ways, and one of the ways they move is that we move them. You know, they travel with us on our products, on our wood products, and sometimes we move them directly. The gypsy moth, which is a defoliator of hardwood trees, was brought over deliberately by an amateur entomologist who wanted to see if he could start a local silkworm industry. He thought he could breed, you know, breed these, and because they do make silk, it's really not suitable for silk, you know, fabric, unfortunately. But he built this, I've seen pictures, so this was in the early 1900s. He built this beautiful insectiary, just so complicated, in Massachusetts. But then a hurricane came, and trees came down and destroyed his insectiaries. And he reported himself. He reported himself to what was then the equivalent of APHIS and said, oh, you know, this is terrible what I've done. But nobody could find the insects until about 40 years later, because they had to build up, but they did. We built up a population, and now the East is just living with them, and we're trying to keep them out of the West.
It's amazing you contracted that to the one guy.
Yeah.
A lot of things we can't.
Well, he confessed. So you know, he knew he'd done wrong. But it was too late by then to do anything. Yes?
What's your best prediction about the trees around Fulton?
Well, some will die from their injuries.
Yeah.
And usually it takes about 3 years before you know really if the tree is going to recover. And so it's this year and the next 2 years, I would be really looking at what bark beetles might do. Because bark beetles will take out, percentage-wise, it's a low percentage that bark beetles take out. Most trees that die from fire die from their injuries. But then there's always a certain percentage that die from fire, and then or that die from bark beetles, and then other things could happen if we get blowdown now of damaged trees. Then that can introduce more resource for the bark beetles. So it's really something that we just need to be aware of.
It's like in a human epidemic where if the healthy almost always survive, right? And you have some that will survive.
Yes.
It just might not be many.
Right. But there have already been changes, and there will be more. Mm-hmm. And of course, the dead trees will start to come down.
What if the dead tree falls down? How long can it use by the bark beetles before?
Different insects use it. So bark beetles really need it to be fresh. They have no interest. Well, they need very recently dead trees. So trees that were killed last year are of no use to bark beetles this year. Trees that are weakened, though, or if a tree fell over, the cambium needs to be moist and it needs to be pretty fresh. It can't have be moldy or dry. And sometimes you'll see bark beetles attacking a tree that has started to dry out, and usually that's what we call a sink for beetles. So beetles will go in, but no beetles will come out because it'll just be too dry. And they'll start the brood, but then the brood will never mature. So that can happen. Did I answer
the question?
Yeah. And then there are wood borers that need some cambium, but then they can also live in the wood. And then once they're done, then you get into the termites and the ants and those kinds of things that will live in there and just to break it down. Yeah, and some of the little, and then the fungi and all those things.
I think it's amazing how long a tree actually can last once it's down. It's a long time.
Yeah, and it depends a lot on how it died. So sometimes trees will just get superheated by the fire, and they almost become case-hardened, and nothing will live in there. And those logs can last for a long time if they're not in contact with the soil. If they're in contact with the soil and they're wet all the time, then they'll start to break down.
If we were to go outside in 5 minutes' time, could you find a tree and show us some beetles?
Depending on how much of a walk you're willing to take, I can certainly show you where we put out the MCH caps. And I can show you where I chopped with those beetles. But we do have to go through some brush and up the hill.
Would you be willing to do that
sure.
if some of us would follow you?
Yep, absolutely.